The Big Red Bench. Game on. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.
The Joanne O'Riordan Podcast. A Big Red Bench production for Cork's Red FM.
Hello and welcome back to the Joanna Reardon Podcast with me, Joanna Reardon. Our next guest is Tracy Kennedy, who's the very first ever female chairperson of the Cork County Board and the second ever woman to hold a similar title within the GAA. Tracy talks about what it was like growing up as a sports fan in Killa, how she rose up through the ranks through the divisional board into the Cork County Board, and how weirdly she actually never played sport herself.
Hi Joanne, it's great to be here.
How are you?
Very good now.
Very busy?
Yeah, it's crazy. There's always something going on.
I know,
but,
yeah.
But, you know, I think I might be bored or otherwise, so it's no harm.
I think you picked, like, the worst / best year to decide to be, like, a chairperson of Cork County Board. It's been manic, to say the least.
It really has. The last 6 months particularly have been absolutely crazy. But I suppose when you're involved in an organisation the size of Cork GAA, there's always going to be something.
Yeah.
It's just maybe in the last few months there've been more than one something.
I always, like, forget just how big, like, the area you have to cover. Like, it's mad, like, all the way from, like, Barra to Rockchapel. Like,
yeah, and it's not even just the geography of it. There's just so many different layers as well.
Yeah.
I don't think I fully understood the size of the thing until I became chairperson myself. And there's so many different units within the county, you know, whether it's clubs, whether it's schools, whether it's all of the different things that go on. Then you have your inter-county teams. There's non-stop, you know, and it's just really huge. And trying to juggle all that can be really difficult. I don't know, you know, if I'd realised how big it was when I was starting off, I might have had second thoughts.
I know, looking at the map going, no,
yeah.
I'm okay. What's really interesting for me is that when I was, like, reading on, like, your story and everything you've done, it was really cool because everyone always says to me, oh, you don't play sport. So, like, how do you know what's going on? And I'm like, I don't know, like, sometimes fans and journalists kind of know nearly as much as a player, you know, whatever. But, like, growing up in Killa, I suppose, we had Mary O'Connor in last week. She was saying there wasn't actually much opportunity for female sports, for female sports. But you yourself, you weren't even involved in sport. Like, you were saying you're the eldest, so your parents were, like, hiding you away and you were scared of the ball. Like, how were you so into sports? Like, is it a family thing or...
Yeah, I think growing up in Killa at the time I grew up, and, you know, I would have been in primary school with Mary O'Connor, even though I'm a couple of years older than her. And I don't know if she told you the story about how she used to go to the field with the boys while the rest of the girls went knitting.
No.
But yeah, I often tell that story myself. But growing up in Killa, you couldn't but be interested in the GAA, I think, particularly. And it was all GAA at that time.
You went to school with Jodine?
Yeah, Joe and Mary. Now, again, I'm a couple of years ahead of them, but they were all part of my growing up. Mark Landers was a couple of years older than me.
Mm.
So Killa was a place, I suppose, where at the time I was growing up, the GAA had a lot of success. Our club, or you know, at underage level, we would have won a lot with the likes of Jodine playing. There was great excitement. My family, I suppose, my mother and her sister both married two publicans in Killa, and they were two huge GAA families that they married into. So my aunt's husband would have been a huge influence on me as a small child. He was a hurley maker, and he and his father had been hurley makers before him. Now, they had, I think, maybe stopped the hurleys at that stage, but he made hurleys for Christy Ring.
Yeah.
So, like, at home, there was a template of a hurley that Christy Ring had used. So, like, for me, you know, this was just part of everything since I was a very small child. The GAA was all around us. And, you know, we had so much fun around it, you know, going to games. And we used to have this tradition, I suppose they had in a lot of rural places. I don't know if it still happens with health and safety. But, you know, when we won anything, so everyone would sit out the windows of the cars and there'd be a parade up and down the village and the beeping and the waving the jerseys. Oh, my gosh, I loved that, you know, as a child. And as I say, Killa had a lot of success at that time. And then Cork had significant success as well. So it was great. It's like there were brilliant moments when I think of Mark Landers captaining Cork, you know, it was so huge for Killa. So it was like you couldn't have grown up in Killa at that time without being interested in sport. The fact that I didn't play really didn't make any difference.
Yeah.
I was just a huge supporter. And then as I got older, I suppose I was always interested in administration. I would have been involved with the community council when I was quite young in Killa as well. And I was approached by the club to know, would I take the role of juvenile secretary? There were changing officers. There had been some people who'd been there for a while. I joke with our local mechanic, Dominic Fogarty, that he was the one who I blame for all of this because he approached me to become juvenile secretary. And, you know, I was at a bit of a loose end at the time. So I took it and that's sort of where the administrative thing progressed from there. But, you know, that was brilliant because it gave me an opportunity to be part of it. And as you say, you don't have to play
yeah.
to get the benefit of sport. And I say this all the time, you know, I love quoting the song, you know, all God's creatures got a place in the choir. Some just clap their hands. Well, that would have been me. Yeah. I just clap my hands.
I was definitely a clapper.
Yeah, yeah. But that's important too. I mean, supporters are hugely important. Mm. Administrators are important. Someone has to run the thing. It's about players and it's about games. But there has to be organisation of it too, and there has to be support.
It's different though, because it's refreshing to not hear like a constant player's voice all the time. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like sometimes you just need the other perspective. Like sometimes when I'm watching the Sunday game and it's like all ex-players, I'm like, it'd be really cool if we had like a journalist on to see what his view was, or if we had like, you know, a fan who's actually properly into it, you know, not going psycho about his own team. Like it's just a different voice, I suppose. A different voice, I suppose, more than anything. So, and that's what you brought to the table. Like it's really funny because you seem quite shy. So was it like weird to you were going into this all male environment, or was it something that you were aware of, or did you care? Or?
Yeah, it wasn't a big thing at the start, because in my club in Killa there would have been other women involved, you know. It wasn't a big deal at all, and there was no sort of, oh, we've got a woman coming in as secretary like that. And back in the 1980s my club had a female secretary. She's actually back there now as secretary again many years later. But you know, so it wasn't a huge thing at all for me. And as I say, there were loads of women involved in the club, and at the time, you know, we had, I suppose, so many, you know, people like Mary O'Connor who were, I suppose, so well known from our club and involved in sport. And her mother actually, also Mary, was, you know, a brilliant person who did a lot in the GA as well. And there was lots of other women like that involved at various levels. I think that's the case with a lot of clubs anyway. There's women involved a lot at the grassroots level. But so like the all male thing, and I knew all these people as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's the whole thing. Now I do remember, I still remember my first club meeting, my first GA club meeting, there was a major discussion took place about the type of fertilizer we should be putting on the grass. And they were, you know, these numbers, like, you know, whether it was 10, 10, 20 or 5, 15, 8 or something. I'm picking out random numbers here. And I remember
you're
sitting there
right,
going,
I did like science. You're okay.
I'm sitting there going, you know, gosh, I don't know. Do I have anything to contribute to this discussion? You know, but no, as I say, I never felt the pressure. No, the shyness thing, isn't it? You know, I am a very shy person.
Yeah.
But I think the GA has been brilliant for me. Then, because from that point of view, because if I didn't sort of push myself beyond my comfort zone, I would probably be at home every night reading a book and never go outside the door. You know, that's heaven. So you can't do that. You know, you have to push yourself out there. So being involved in the GA has been really beneficial to me from that point of view.
Yeah.
It, you know, I still get nervous when I have to speak at things. I still don't like being in a room full of strangers, but I can manage it a lot better than I would have been able to without my involvement in the GA.
What like sparked your like desire for like administration? Because it's not something like you have on like a list of things I want to do. Like, you know, for me, it's like people ask me all the time, oh, why'd you be an activist? I'm like, I just like it. Like, it's fun to like speak up and speak out about things. Do you feel the same about that? That it gives you a pathway to maybe fix something you're not, that you personally aren't happy about, but something you see that isn't working correctly and you're like, oh, I have a suggestion. You know, are you that kind of person in the background, you know?
Yeah, I think it's the opportunity to be able to do something. Is what makes it attractive. Probably the same reason for you, you know, in terms of activism. You know, it's just that opportunity to be able to do something, to be able to organise something, to be able to contribute to something. And from my point of view, when it's the GA, well, here's this association that I love so much.
Yeah.
And administration gives me the opportunity to hopefully bring something to the table there, make some adjustments, change something that needs to be changed, just do something to improve it or maintain what's good, or, you know, fix what isn't. The opportunity to be able to do that is definitely very attractive. I like organising things as well. I suppose,
you look like an organiser.
Yeah, even though I wouldn't ever say I'm the most organised person in my personal life. Now, it must be said, I got a lovely planner this year and it's helping. It's finally helping me a little bit. But I do like organising associations, events, things like that. I really enjoy that. I always have done, I think. And even in my day job now, you know, it's very much about administration as well.
Yeah.
So it's just, I think, something I like and I'm okay at. I wouldn't say I'm brilliant at it, but I'm reasonably good at it.
Yeah. I suppose in 2009, shortly after Geraldine actually vacated the chair of East Cork board to become a county PRO, you then became the divisional PRO. And is that like an even bigger leap again? Like, I mean, I suppose you were kind of, were you going to kind of county board meetings at that time, or was it just when you were elected as the head, that's when you started going?
No, I've been going to the county board for quite some time now. I can't remember exactly when I started going, but it was around the time that I started off as secretary of our club, of the adult section of our club. I started going to county board meetings as a delegate and also to East Cork board meetings as a delegate. And I suppose that was where I started to see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
You know, you're going beyond the club then, and you begin to see, you know, there's a whole mechanism here and it isn't just about my club.
Yeah.
And sometimes what's right for my club isn't maybe what's right for the bigger picture, or there's just more going on. I found that very interesting. And again, I would say I was very lucky, very welcomed at the divisional board, even though I was the only female there at the time. And that was where I did start to notice, you know, maybe being the only person, the only woman or whatever, the only one who was a little bit different. But I never found that in a negative way. No, people were very welcoming to me, which was great. So I became divisional PRO then. And that was really interesting. I enjoyed that work. And then I was on the county PR committee as a result of being divisional PRO. And again, that was a kind of a start-up time for things. So Bob Ryan had just started the website when he was finishing up, and Gerard then moved that on a bit, and I was involved in helping out there, and social media was just becoming a thing.
Yeah, because so Twitter came around when you were...
That's right. I set up the Cork GA Twitter. And that was just a new thing.
Yeah.
And it was like the GA was a bit slow to embrace Twitter, which I can understand. It was a new medium at the time. And these were, you know, it was interesting to be involved in times of change. We were also changing over, the GA was changing over to a new email system, which has, like, it sounds so basic now, you know, but there had been no sort of standard email system within the GA.
And that's insane.
It is. It's so hard to imagine. And, you know, I spent like much of one summer making phone calls to club secretaries all around the county. We divided up the county between a few of us on the PR committee. And, you know, just trying to help people to change over. Actually made some great contacts through that process. And some people I'm still very friendly with now were people I spoke to first, trying to help them, you know, to set up the GA emails. And that was a brilliant thing for communication, because it meant that, you know, the county board office could easily communicate with every club, meant clubs could easily communicate with each other. You didn't have to know who the secretary of Castleton Bear was, you know, because you just had this standard email address. So it sounds so small now, you know, but it was an innovation at the time. So all of those things were really interesting to be involved in. And I enjoyed that so much that, you know, when the next time round came, the role of PRO came up for the county board, I really wanted to give it a go. I was divisional secretary as well at that stage, but, you know, I felt I could try managing the two, and I did. But yeah, I really wanted the role of PRO in the county.
I remember, like, the first time I met you, I think you'd just gotten the PRO job. And I remember myself, my friend, now we were very young at the time, just a disclaimer here. We were outside looking to take pictures of Graham Kente. I'm just putting it out there. And I remember you came out, and I remember my friend said something to me like, oh man, it must be so awkward for her going into men's dressing rooms all the time. And I remember you turned and you were like, it is really awkward. Is it though? Like, is it just like...
I don't go into the dressing rooms now, I should say.
You came out like the doorway.
I suppose, no, again, it was something I'd been an experience of from being involved in my own club. And, you know, it would have been brought in occasionally for team talks and so on. But, you know, it was something, I suppose, I don't find it particularly awkward for me personally.
Yeah.
But I would be always conscious that the lads might find it awkward.
They find it way more awkward normally, yeah.
So basically, I tend not to. Some venues are very well set up so that you can be in the dressing room area without being in the dressing room.
Yeah.
So we'll say in the Hogan Stand side of Croke Park, you can actually walk through. There's a kind of a passageway through the room, but the actual rooms where the players are off that.
Yeah.
So that's okay. You can go in if you need to get somebody. The Cusack Stand side, not so much, you know. So then I have to send somebody in when I need somebody out of the dressing room, that kind of thing. Parky Creeve is very nicely set up because, again, you can be in the dressing room area without having to be inside it. It's just, you know, those are the things. Like, I see other county board officers, you know, can easily go into the dressing room. They go in there. Now, wonder, is there a role for any county board officer in the dressing room anyway? Is it a place you should be anyway? I have no desire to do that, but it's different. I suppose I did find that now when I was PRO, we'll say the other county PRO was able to walk into his dressing room and get whoever he needed.
Yeah.
Whereas when it was my, I generally had to get one of my own lads to say, look, can you ask
knock on the
Connor
door
to come out there or whatever the case may be. Never a problem, but just you know, I suppose you know this yourself, like my example is very trivial, but you just have to find a way to do it.
It's really small. Yeah. It's really small, silly things that no one else kind of sees.
Yeah.
It's unless you're physically there yourself, yeah, you kind of notice it. Like.
But then people are very understanding of it. And I know when one of the greatest memories I have, it'll always stick with me, is the day Knocknagree won the All-Ireland final last year.
Oh,
the All-Ireland,
yeah,
Club final. There was just such joy that day. But I was walking over, they were on the Cusack stand side and my car was parked at that side. I was walking over and, you know, they were like, oh, you must come in and say a few words to us. Like, do you know, I was like, I don't know, you know, but they had made sure like that everyone was decent, yes, you know, and it was fine. And that was lovely then because I felt fine and everyone, it was grand and a nice environment. And it was just lovely to be in there and be part of it, even though I was mortified when they played it at their dinner. But anyway, you know, so it's just about making adjustments, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. As PRO, I suppose, you were saying earlier about like that sometimes it is challenging getting everyone together and things like that. I suppose another group that, and I work in media, so I can safely say we can be a very challenging group. Did you ever find that the media was challenging, not specifically to you, but did you find that this was like a new challenge, like how to get good relationships, but also maintain it professionally so things could still roll at like a good level, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, in my experience as PRO, I have to say my work with the media was always a very positive experience for me. And I remember being at Croke Park 2 training days for new officers. And I remember being at my first training day and someone from the GAA communications team saying, you know, we hear a lot, you said, about dealing with the media, you know, it's not dealing with the media, it's working with the media, you know, and the media are such an important part of coverage of sport.
Yeah.
And they give our games so much publicity. So I have to say, you know, during my time as PRO, I found that my relationships generally with the media were very, very positive. I developed friendships that are still friendships, you know, and you just have to understand that there's a gap, you know, their role as a journalist is different from their role as your friend, obviously, you know, and that has to be respected. And, you know, that works both ways. But I would say definitely, even though I often find the negative coverage can be frustrating, I do find that.
Yeah.
And I find that maybe sometimes people forget that both county board officers and players, particularly players, are amateurs, volunteers, you know, people who are giving of their time freely. They could be doing something else with it, that nobody goes out purposely to make mistakes or lose matches. And sometimes I feel there's maybe excessive focus on the negative, and that frustrates me. But
do you think that then that's why we have like the current like barrier we have, that there's like a shutdown? So like we only interact with players before and after matches or in a press day or things like that. Do you think that's the reason why?
Well, I think that's probably some of it. I was having a conversation with a player, an intercounty player, that's a few years ago now, you know, and he was outlining to me a couple of bad experiences he had had. Now, as I say, I haven't had such experiences myself personally. I've been lucky, you know, or maybe not lucky, it's just me, I suppose the media generally are very professional. But like he felt that things he had said to journalists had been taken out of context, or, you know, and we've all seen a situation, we'll say, where a headline doesn't maybe fully reflect what's actually in the piece, but the headline is what people see, that kind of thing. And he had a few of those experiences, and that definitely had closed down towards the media for that reason. And I suppose there is sometimes a tendency to jump on people's mistakes or slip ups or the controversial thing they say, as opposed to everything else that was part of an interview, something like that. And that probably has made both players and managers a bit wary of talking to the media, which is a pity.
Yeah.
You know, that's a pity because the exposure we get is important. And as part of the Cork football plan, you know, there's a section there where it's recognised that Cork football particularly needs a bit more, you know, we need to be a bit more open to the media in order to generate more coverage and therefore more support. So like there's a plan in place for that. So it is important that we have that. And I think the fact people always appreciate where players or managers are, you know, are real in their interviews, but then maybe there has to be a bit of give and take there, and the media maybe have to pull back a little bit then from focusing on the slip-ups.
Yeah.
You know, if they want true openness. So it's give and take, but I do think it's hard to turn back the tide, like, and we've moved into a world now where there is that barrier, as you say.
And I suppose as well, like with social media, it is very easy. So like maybe the author of the article might publish it, but someone in the corner might have heard it and be like, I'll post this on Twitter.
Mm.
So there's that as well. Is that even harder to control now?
It can be. And with, you know, tweets, it was one thing, and I know people might see it as a negative, but we have a no tweeting policy from county board meetings.
Okay.
But the reason for that is there's only a very little bit you can put into a tweet. Now, yeah. I know it's increased from what it used to be. But, you know, you have something that's taken generally out of its wider context. And even if someone is live tweeting, they're missing bits in between. Because obviously by the time you're writing the tweet, you're missing a little bit
in between. You know you were doing it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Twitter, from that point of view, while it's a wonderful medium, it can also be a bit of a risky one. And then there's a huge amount of negativity on Twitter. I mean, I've contemplated a number of times closing my own personal Twitter account because I get a reasonable level of abuse.
Is
you
it
know.
Bad?
It can
now
be bad.
Now that you're a chairperson? Yeah. Or was it always...
It's more now... Well, I think I don't know if it's that I'm chairperson. I just think Twitter is going that way more. Okay. You know, there seems to be...
It's that. Intense though, because I mean... Yeah. I think at the end of the day, what we all need to know, and even like myself included, like, okay, sure, and I'm jumping a little bit here, but sure, we're all currently frustrated, you know, with Cork and everything going on, but that's not... specifically your fault. Like, there's a load of reasons why this is happening, you know?
Yeah, and like, if I could change it, obviously I would, yeah. You know? I mean, if I could wave a magic wand and make Cork win in Ireland, I would.
Yeah.
And I suppose it can be frustrating at times when you say, like, I mean, I give up all of my free time to the GAA, really. Like, yeah. And my friends and family are totally neglected. And then, you know, when you see people being so critical, that can be a little bit hard to take.
Yeah.
So, like, my biggest problem on Twitter is trying not to respond.
Are you, like, even more on, like, a... like a can't respond because you have such a high profile now?
Well, it's like anything.
Before you could have slid in and be like, hey.
Yeah, but if I respond now, then it becomes a big thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not, why would I do that? You know, why would I put myself in that position? And why would I drag Cork into that sort of situation?
And also, why would you give air to their specific comment as well?
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, my phone number is on the Cork GAA website. So, like, if someone has an issue with the GAA, they can ring me. You don't have to shout at me on Twitter.
I always thought that was like a secondary phone.
No.
I didn't realise it was like a direct to you.
No, and like, I haven't, I'm fairly accessible. So, like, why shout at me on Twitter, you know, when you could actually say to me, look, I think there's something you're doing wrong here. You know, why are you doing it?
Yeah.
And give me a chance to explain, you know, that kind of thing. But I understand that's not how the world works at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a pity really, because I think Twitter is a fantastic medium and it's a brilliant way to get across live information.
Mm.
But at the same time, there's a lot of negativity there. And I think like what I get is minor. You know, when you think of, say, what politicians get.
Yeah.
You know, and the abuse they get. And, you know, no matter how resilient you are. And I
no one's outside your home yet.
Yeah, well, so far. Not that I'm aware of. God, yeah, you're giving me a bit of a fright there now, Joanne.
I study crime for you. Yeah. I always take it, like, the next level. Everyone's like, ah, Joanne, it didn't have to go there.
But no, I mean, there are some people who get a really unwarranted level of abuse. No one deserves that.
If you ever feel bad, I remember I wrote an article last year and it was about the NFL and it was about the kneeling during the anthem policy and Colin Kaepernick and everyone else, just in case anyone's not aware.
I read it.
And someone wrote to me, he was clearly a veteran, so I had no issue with it, basically saying to contain my vinegary thoughts. And my brother framed it and gave it to me as a Christmas present because he thought it was the funniest thing on the planet that Joanna Reardon got hate. He was like, this is the first time I've ever seen it. So there, at least your brothers aren't framing.
No, that's true. My hate mail isn't in the frames yet.
No, that's it.
That was the end of part one of our interview with Tracy Kennedy. Tune in next week for part two, and don't forget to follow us on social media at JoannaWar_OX, at Big Red Bench, and subscribe to the Joanna Reardon podcast on Apple, Spotify, and listen to us on redextra.ie. Cheerio.
The Big Red Bench.
Game on.
Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m.